Welcome to the Growth Equation Podcast. We're your hosts, Brad Stahlberg
and Steve Magnus.
Brad, what's going on, my man?
Not so much, Steve. Looking forward to today's conversation. Still recovering from the fasciotomy on my leg, but on the right track. I walked around my neighborhood last night with only one crutch, so slowly but surely, having to practice what I preach, take my own medicine, be patient. It's the principle I struggle with the most.
I think it's the principle all of us struggle with the most. So, all right. Well, it's 105 degrees in Houston. I'm just trying to stay inside and not die on my runs and walks. But
is it really 105 right now?
It is today. It's crazy.
Is that the hottest it's been this year?
Yeah, it's like a record for July of, you know, ever.
Wow, so, that is so hot.
Yeah.
I bet your air conditioning bill is very expensive.
It is. So you know what would help listeners? You can help me with my air conditioning bill. If you go buy the new book, Do Hard Things, it will go straight into paying for our air conditioning so that I can sleep optimally. Whenever I told Brad, you know, I sleep with it in the mid-low 70s, he freaked out. But we have to do that when it's 105. So in all seriousness, Do Hard Things, out now on discount on Amazon. That could go away. We have no control over it. But if you're looking for resilience or toughness, check it out. And even more importantly, you know who is the special author, guest speaker coming up on our Patreon group, Brad?
Who's that, Steve?
That would be me. So we have another special guest speaker as well coming up. But if you're interested and have read Do Hard Things, check out our Patreon group where we have monthly author Zoom get-togethers, plus options for quarterly masterminds, plus some behind-the-scenes podcast stuff that we're going to be adding shortly as we, you know, revamp and try and improve on things.
So two actions to take if you want to support the show. Number one, get Do Hard Things from wherever books are sold. If you like to listen, get it on Audible. If you like to read it, get it from bookstores, get it from Amazon. We just want you reading the book. Number two, head over to Patreon, www.patreon.com/thegrowthequation. For as little as $5 a month, you support the show, keep it ad-free, and you get all kinds of neat stuff. So with that said, we're going to open today by me going back to high school for a bit. So I was a decent athlete growing up. I was no Steve Magnus, 4-flat-miler prodigy, but I was a pretty good basketball player. And in middle school, I got on the AAU circuit. I played pretty well. I came off the bench for a team that was quite competitive in the Midwest. And I thought basketball was going to be my thing. I absolutely loved it. All the other kids were going to overnight camp called Tamarack. I went for 2 years. My parents tried to send me the third year. I remember I'm in seventh grade. I look at my mom and dad and I'm like, there's only one activity at Tamarack that I like. And that's when they let us play basketball. So why don't I just go to a basketball camp? So then I started going to University of Michigan's basketball camp. And I was on the path to play college basketball. And then I got to high school, and the coach that ran the varsity program was just a complete authoritarian asshole. And I played my freshman and sophomore year, and by my junior year, even though I was a much better basketball player than football player, I decided to just focus on football. I ran track to be a dual sport athlete, and I didn't play basketball. Because this guy led from such a place of viciousness and fear. And what was really interesting too is he was a really good coach in terms of the game itself. He's a good high school basketball coach, but could not engage with the kids who were what I'll call generally good kids. So I had a 3.8 GPA. I had my shit together. I wasn't doing drugs in high school. He was wonderful for some of the athletes that would have gotten into big trouble. He straightened them out. But with good kids, he just didn't know what to do. He had no place in his heart that could take a good kid and lead from a place of freedom. It was all about fear. And I quit playing basketball my junior year, decided just to play football. And that's it. I mean, I haven't played competitive basketball since then, but I'm good enough where I can still smoke my neighbors and horse. And every time we play horse, I kid you not, this probably says a lot about my sense of identity, and I smoke these neighbors that play in the men's league, I can't help but think, if I'm going to call him TM, those are his initials, if TM hadn't been the coach, would I have played at a D1 college basketball program and have had a totally different experience? And I'll never know, but it still haunts me to this day.
That's a fascinating story that I'd never heard you tell, Brad.
Yeah, man, and I was good. I was on the AAU circuit, for real. I could play. Yeah.
That's crazy.
It was intense. Like, there was talk of maybe like moving so I could go to a different school to play basketball. Like, all that crazy stuff that you hear about, I went through. And obviously, I'm happy how things turned out, because I'm sitting here getting to record a podcast with you, and I write books, and I love my wife who I met in college. But yeah, of course, there's a part of me that's like, yeah, I mean, would have been interesting to see what would have happened.
So today we're
I'll say one more thing to defend myself. Yeah. So I wasn't uncoachable either, because even though I wasn't as good as football, I became the captain of the varsity football team. And our football team, the captains were voted on and then crowned by the coaches. So the coaches basically got to like pick the captains. So I wasn't an uncoachable kid. It was just, and it wasn't just me. A lot of other people went through this. So yeah, he was an authoritarian coach and he wasn't a good fit for me. And you did a lot of research for Do Hard Things on this kind of coach. So that's what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, you know, your story, maybe to jump into some of this research, it reminds me of a lot of the stories that I read, some of them which were in the book, but some that didn't make it, on athletes who were from the 1950s all the way up to the 2000s, who went through similar situations. The one that I wrote about in the book that sticks out is the famous Junction Boys camp, which was Texas A&M's Paul Bear Bryant. And it's gone down in this lore as this camp that was like, you know, crazy hard, difficult, and led to them making, you know, vast improvements. But what always struck me is the number of people and the people who quit from that camp, similar to your story of like, hey, I was pretty good at basketball, but I quit. And the list of quitters is pretty astounding. There was one athlete, I'm forgetting off the top of my head, he didn't actually make it in the book part because I had to cut stuff, but who was the top high school recruit in the country, like the top running back in the country, and still considered one of the best high school running backs of all time, who essentially flamed out because of this authoritarian control. And the coach, Paul Bear Bryant, had this wonderful quote, you know, where he was asked his biggest regret, and it was something along, you know, my biggest regret is I had this huge talented running back and I couldn't coach him any other way early in my career, and he didn't make it. But there were all sorts of people who were, you know, one went on to become a war hero and fighter pilot. A couple went on to play in the NFL. One couple went on to choose other sports like you did. One became like a conference champion, captain of the baseball team there. And it just gets me thinking of like, how many good, talented people do we lose because people, you know, say, hey, I can't take this, or like this. It's not even I can't take this. This sucks. This isn't worth my time. And I just need to find something else that better matches my interests and pursuits.
Yeah. And I would add, as someone that had that experience, it wasn't that this is not worth my time, but it was that you take something that is so much fun and you just turn it into trying to avoid not even making a mistake, like trying to avoid setting the coach off, even though you have no idea what you're going to do that sets the coach off. It's almost like the coach needs to be set off because that's their only model of coaching, is from a command and control thing. So what's really interesting, Steve, is that a lot of people today will say, oh, it's just the kids these days. Like, kids are soft, kids are weak, and that's why these kids are uncoachable. Everybody wants a trophy. But what you're telling me is that this is as old as time. In the 1950s and 60s and 70s, the old timers would say it's just the kids these days. So do you think when you were researching this topic, is there like a softening of youth that is leading to harder kids to coach or kids that kind of cower away from a coach that is actually a decent coach? Or do you think that something else is going on?
No. So what I think is going on, and that's a good point, because I think every generation says the same thing about the next. And actually, I'll take it even further back. Again, I forget where the source was, but there was this crazy article on like written in 1905 where they were saying, this coach was saying the same thing about like early football, where it's like, oh, these kids are soft these days. So it's the same complaint all the time, which means it probably doesn't have much merit behind it. And what you're seeing instead is, if we go back to that 1950s, 60s, 70s era, is the power dynamics and the lack of choice were so strong that kids essentially often, even if they wanted to quit, just stayed. There was, again, this wonderful quote by Jack Pardee, who went on to be an NFL coach, from that Junction Boys thing, who said essentially, if I quit, where do I go? Which means I had no other options. So I stayed on the team. There was nothing else I could do. It was either, you know, in another player's terms, it was either to play football at Texas A&M or go work in the fields. So what you see in modern times, I think, is a couple different things. Is the power differential has shifted for good, I think. Athletes have more autonomy. They have more of a say. They're even, you see this often in college, in high school to a degree, but in college especially, is even during our era of college, like I couldn't transfer easily. You had rules on, you had to sit out if you transferred within the conference. You had to get this special exception. There was no transfer portal. Now all those things, you know, the bad things are gone, and now athletes can easily move. They have more control, right? And I think what you're seeing is that has shifted that power differential. So it's not that athletes are weak. It's that, like you're saying, or what you experienced, is when our only lever to pull is the fear lever, then what that does, and the research is very clear on that, is for highly motivated athletes, it sucks the joy, fun, and motivation out of them, and it shifts their motivational drive, even if they came in it with this great intrinsic, I love to play this sport, it literally shifts them towards this extrinsic, of, oh, I only do this because I'm afraid of the coach, or to satisfy the coach or parent or whoever so that I don't get yelled at.
Yeah. And there's these four parenting styles, right, that you could probably overlay into coaching. So one is permissive, where you're like super responsive to the child or to the athlete, but you're not very demanding. So this is like the model of the in the NBA, like what's become so called like the player's coach, who basically just like does what the players want. They don't really coach. And then you've got the neglectful coach. And this is the one that's absent. They're just checked out. And then you've got the authoritarian coach, which is super demanding. They coach based on what works for them, but they don't really respond. They don't read individualized players. So this is the coach, again, that might be great for the kid that needs crazy discipline and yelling because there's actually something wrong and the kid needs straightening out, but has no idea what to do with good kids. And then finally, you've got, different from authoritarian, the authoritative coach, or again, parent. And this is the coach that really has confidence in their own skills and their own ability, can step back, can read the athlete, can read their child, and work with their child, meet them where they are, and kind of like a jazz musician almost, like get into harmony with the athlete, with the kid, to coach them in a way that they're going to get better. Now, you hear this and you're probably like, that sounds really hard. And it is, which is why so few coaches do this. I think you see a lot of permissive coaches, players coaches, and then I think you see a lot of authoritarian coaches, and neither really work.
Yeah, it's a really hard balance. But if you look at the deep research behind both in parenting and in coaching, is both those permissive and authoritarian styles lead to worse outcomes. And often we think of the authoritarian and we think, oh, they're going to lead to better discipline, like you said. But really, that only happens with a subset of individuals. And the data is very clear on coaching and parenting is that authoritarian style leads to worse levels of discipline, lower levels of grit, emotional control, resilience, higher levels of misbehavior, tantrums, etc., burnout. And if you think about it, it makes sense, right? Because if your only lever to pull is this fear, power, control, well, what are you teaching or what is the athlete internalizing? And the athlete is internalizing, as we said, the wrong kind of motivation, but they're also learning the wrong kind of coping skill, as you hinted at before. When we have that kind of power, control, authoritarian, hard-ass model, you're actually ingraining avoidance coping. So how do I not piss my coach or parent off? How do I not get in trouble? And the data is extremely clear here is that avoidance coping versus, let's say, the better model of approach coping, avoidance coping fails. It just doesn't work very well. So it's a real problem and kind of a misconception, because we often think that the power control coach will be, you know, very good in disciplines, but that's often not the case.
Yeah, man, it's like a very Buddhist thing where like you try too hard to like train the horse or like to discipline the horse, and then the horse just rebels, or the horse becomes despairing and rolls over. And the best way to like tame in Buddhism, it's actually not a horse. There's a parable of an ox. The best way to tame the ox isn't to get on it and ride it. It's to walk alongside it. And per the usual, ancient wisdom, just like 2 million years ahead of the research on this kind of stuff. So I think we've made it really clear that the amongst these four types, and we're talking coaching, but we mentioned parenting. I think this is also true if you're a leader in a traditional workplace. So we can even just get broad and call it leading. There's permissive, neglectful, authoritarian, and authoritative. And you want to be authoritative. Neglectful is checked out. Permissive is you just bend over to whatever the people want. Authoritarian is the opposite. You just are a hard ass all the time. And authoritative is you walk with the ox. You walk with the athlete. You walk with your coworker. You walk with your child. What do you think are the biggest traps that people fall into when they try to become more of an authoritative leader? Another way that I like to think about this is you can lead from a place of fear or you can lead from a place of respect. And I always want people to respect me. And that's why I want to be able to have influence, not because they fear me. So let's say that someone's listening to this and they're like, wow, you know, I really want to become more of an authoritative or a lead from respect kind of person. Or maybe you already are, you're listening to this podcast, there's a lot of selection bias. Maybe you're thinking that, hey, one of the people that reports to me in my organization and manages a team could really benefit from kind of moving up the scale to be more authoritative. How do you coach people to do that?
Yeah, so I think it starts with where's your weak point, right? Where do you fall on this kind of demanding versus responsiveness? Are you more towards the permissive or are you more towards the power and control? And that is step number one for what way do we need to go. And in sport, you often, and even in the workplace often, what you see is more of the leading towards power and control, because that feels natural, almost like I'm the authority, like do what I say. And in that case, what we need to do is is almost turn up the dial on the responsiveness and care. So giving that person the toolkit to understand, okay, what does it really mean to get buy-in, to get people to walk alongside the horse or the ox, as you said, and like really understand what they're looking for or what leads and motivates them. And I think, you know, it really comes down to filling people's basic psychological needs.
Which we always come back to this.
Always come back to this all the time, which is, you know, autonomy, competency, belonging. We can throw some other things in there, but I think it provides a nice, useful framework. And then On the flip side, for like the permissive side, where you have no, you know, what and
parenting. No control over your athletes, yep. Let's say.
So there, I think it's not saying, hey, exert some control. I think it's saying, hey, what are your expectations and start setting some standards? So, for example, what actually matters in your place? So in the athletic realm, like what actually matters? You know, showing up to practice, for example. Because I'll give you personal examples. My tendency is like I am like the opposite of wanting to exert control. So I'm just like, you know, care, support, all that stuff. But in a coaching role, I had to say, okay. And, you know, for me personally, like I was going to be the person who would show up no matter what. I was highly intrinsically motivated, but not everybody is like that coming in. So I had to be like, okay, what are our standards? What are our expectations? And I'd always outline them at the very beginning, which is, you know, is pretty simple. It's like you show up to practice, you be honest and forthright with me. And if you do that, you're going to have my trust. And then that effort is a must. When we, you know, show up to work hard, we're going to work hard. Now I'm going to tell you when it's time to work hard and when it's time not to, but when it's time to go, we got to flip that switch. And whether you're a coach or you're a leader, it's like really defining those expectations and standards, which can often boost you from that permissive to that authoritative.
Love it. The last thing that I'll ask Steve is, how do you see this in comparison to like the good enough parent concept, which I wrote about in Groundedness in the chapter on patience, where the goal isn't to neglect the kid or the athlete or the employee. So it's not permissive. The goal is also not to like helicopter. It's just to create a space to let the person unfold on their own and then to nudge them back into that space when they go out of line, when they fall out of it.
Yeah, I think it works really well from that, because what you're looking at is balance, right? The authoritative parent is really just someone who has the balance to say like, hey, I'm not going to be the helicopter or the pushy dad or the, you know, the little league dad who's just like hovering all over and like yelling at my kid or getting on them all the time for not doing whatever. I'm going to create the space where, you know, maybe they have the environment to explore that stuff, and I create that space to that so that they can, but then I am able to step back and let them do stuff. You know, one of our, I think you follow him now, but Tom House put this brilliantly the other day, who's Tom House is a baseball coach who's worked with Nolan Ryan and Tom Brady and all these other throwers, we'll call them. But he was like, you know why your kids want to play video games? Because it's the one area where they can play a game, mess up, not have any adult tell them what they did wrong, and just kind of enjoy it, move on. If you go out and play sports nowadays, unfortunately, there's always a correction. There's always a hovering. There's always an adult to tell you how to improve what and what have you. And they no longer have the space to play. And I think that's where it's that good enough parent is like, you're giving them the space to play or that space to explore, and there's constraints around that and there's nudging that goes on, but that's where growth occurs.
And maybe it's not the kids these days, maybe it's the parents these days. Because, you know, what I was thinking is growing up, we used to, in my neighborhood, starting in like fifth grade and then throughout middle school, there was this Korean church that was on a corner of the streets. See if I can remember these right. Not 13 Mile, Farmington and some other street, Drake, I don't know. But there's this Korean church on the corner, and it had this perfectly flat parking lot. And every freaking day after school, when the weather was nice, everyone would meet up in the church in the roller skates and we played roller hockey. And then when the weather was not nice, everyone would meet at the church and we played football on the grass field behind it. And there were no parents, and we got into fights and we had to work that shit out, and people got mad at each other and people got injured, but no one died. And I mean, those were like the best memories ever. And I never played any video games. Why would we play video games when we could go play hockey or football at the church? And I think that now in so many parts of the country, everything is so freaking organized. So, you know, your kid shows some athletic prowess, well, suddenly they're on a team where they have formal practices 4 days a week, or they're going to a hitting coach, or the parents are scared that someone's going to kidnap their kid, which I recently read, by the way, is outside of kidnappings where there's like a divorce in the family and the other, like the one of the spouses takes the kid, you have a better chance of being hit by lightning than being kidnapped by a random person. So many of these fears are just completely off, like unhinged, but we're really hurting kids by not giving them that space to just learn, develop, and grow.
And there's actually a lot of research in the play area, or research on play that shows exactly that. Even the arguments and the fighting or what have you, is that's how we learn to negotiate and manage like emotions, and then also manage how to solve conflict. So when that's gone, we don't develop those skills as well because, you know, we don't have it. And play allows this perfect place to do it because the consequences actually aren't that high. And the only thing I'd add is I think there's a lot to it because that was, you know, you're in Michigan, I'm in Texas, but we had a cul-de-sac where we would do the same thing, play roller hockey. And if not, we'd play baseball in that cul-de-sac or in the field down the street. And we do that all summer or on weekends. And there was almost never a parent around. And I think that is, again, it's this place, this, you know, safe space gets a bad rep, but it was literally this safe space from adults to ruin it. And I think nowadays the safe space for adults, you know, not to ruin it is video games, for better and worse. So maybe now, instead of, you know, we need to create that space where kids can play sports, enjoy, you know, what they're doing and play without adults micromanaging, helicoptering, or, you know, correcting on everything.
Love it. Couldn't agree more. That's certainly the atmosphere and the community I'm going to try to create as my kids get a little bit older.
Excellent. Well, I think that will do it for today. If you enjoyed this, as we said, there's lots more of it and do hard things. We'll discuss it in our Patreon group. And if you enjoyed this podcast, we'd really appreciate it if, you know, you might share it with someone who might find it helpful. So maybe a parent, a coach, a leader who might need to, you know, update or learn about these things. We'd greatly appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Growth Equation Podcast. Learn more about our work and find show notes at our website, www.thegrowtheq.com. Follow us on Twitter at B. Stahlberg and at Steve Magnus. And if you like what you listen to, please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast, as this goes a long way in helping it reach others.